America is an exceptional country. The first solo transatlantic flight, the construction of the Hoover Dam and the Panama Canal, the first man on the moon, turning the tide in World War II to defeat the Axis powers, bringing polio to near eradication, creating GPS. These things and a thousand others all bear witness to American mettle and ingenuity. And think about this. The people of the United States make up about 4% of the world's population, yet they produce 26% of global economic output, and they hold 33% of the world's wealth. Americans also enjoy one of the highest standards of living in the world, and by far the highest for a populous nation. The U.S. also ranks among, or at the top of, the world's most creative and innovative nations. It's the most generous country on the globe, and it has the highest degree of technological innovation. And it has shown as a beacon of prosperity for 250 years now this month. Commentators have long explained America's exceptionalism through factors like laissez-faire economics, our political institutions, culture, values, social mobility, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, our broad commitment to equality. And all of these matter, but there is another often overlooked factor, one that actually underpins many of those others. It's a foundation that reaches back into the earliest chapters of human history and quietly shapes everything built upon it. What we're talking about here is America's geography. Thank you for tuning in to Trumpet World. I'm Jeremiah Jacques, subbing in for your regular host, Mr. Richard Palmer. And on today's episode, we will take a close look at America's geography to see just how extraordinary America's chunk of real estate is, to see just how unusual it is, how unmatched it is. And we will examine why America came to possess it. Abraham Lincoln understood the exceptional geographic circumstances that the American people had been placed in. He once famously said, "We find ourselves in the peaceful possession of the fairest portion of the earth as regards extent of territory, fertility of soil, and salubrity of climate." End quote. Now, Lincoln's emphasis on climate there was astute because America's most valuable geographic characteristic is not its immense amount of land, but its immense amount of usable land. You know, there are several other countries, Russia, Canada, and China, that have quite a bit more square mileage than the United States. But harsh climates render the bulk of their territories unusable for habitation, agriculture, or development. Various austere climates also overshadow Australia and most nations of the Middle East, North Africa, and great large swaths of Latin America and Asia as well. But the situation in the United States is starkly different. For huge swaths of our land, precipitation and temperature interact in rare harmony to yield the most resilient soils in the world. America has the largest contiguous mass of arable land on the globe, and this land mass is also bookended by huge tracts of fertile terrain on both coasts. These climatic conditions make possible just an astonishing agricultural output. America only makes up 4% of the global population, as I said, but we produce 30% of the world's corn, 32% of soybeans, 40% of sorghum, and similarly outsized proportions of numerous other agricultural commodities. Thanks overwhelmingly to the nation's geography, the United States exports more food than any other country. And listen to this, agriculture accounts for only 1% of the U.S. economy. Truly remarkable how much can be produced by so few people. And then beyond agriculture, the U.S. is also richly endowed with mineral and energy resources. America is now the world's largest producer of crude oil and natural gas, and a major exporter of both. So the land of the U.S., the soil, and everything that's in it is extraordinary beyond words. But now let's shift gears here a little bit and talk about rivers. Because the river situation of America is every bit as exceptional. While most countries' terrain is pleasantly interrupted by at least a few rivers, no other nation's maritime transport system is as magnificent as that of America. AmericanRivers.org says the U.S. has over 250,000 rivers, totaling over 3.5 million miles of flowing water. A person could fly to the moon and back 7 times and not have crossed that many miles. And then, even more valuable than the number of rivers is the fact that most of them connect to at least one other river, creating a vast network of waterways. Chief among these is the Mississippi River, and its connection to the Ohio River, the Red, the Tennessee, and the Missouri River. That forms the largest interconnected network of navigable rivers on the planet. Besides this incomparable internal transport system, America is also home to arguably all three of the world's largest and best natural harbors. That is San Francisco Bay, Chesapeake Bay, and New York Bay. And the U.S. has dozens of other excellent natural harbors as well. And at the same time, U.S. coastal shipping is shielded in an extraordinary way by the series of barrier islands off the East Coast and the Gulf of Mexico. These island groups form intracoastal waterways that protect smaller watercraft and port facilities from all but the most tempestuous weather. The value of America's maritime network can best be understood by comparing it to that of other nations. Russia, for example, has several long rivers, but they seldom connect to each other, and not one leads to a convenient port. All three of Russia's largest rivers flow obstinately north, emptying into the frozen sludge of the Arctic Ocean. And since they are frozen for much of the year, they're not consistently navigable. And then you come to the Volga, which does flow south, but it empties into the Caspian Sea, which is landlocked. So that can only bring Russian vodka and other goods to a few Middle Eastern and Central Asian countries. And then the Volga and the Caspian both freeze over for parts of the year as well, which paralyzes these shipment lines. And as bad off as Russia is, many nations are even poorer maritime transport situations. America's exceptional waterway system is truly miles beyond that of any other country, and it's by no virtue of the American people. Recognition of this incredible blessing prompted journalist Charles Kuhlrout to famously write, "America is a great story, and there is a river on every page." Far more astonishing than America's unmatched agricultural capacity or its awe-inspiring natural maritime network is the way the two go together. Rather than cutting arbitrarily through the country, dozens of America's largest rivers intersect our main agricultural zones. So this means without digging canals, boats can travel to almost any region in the Midwest from almost any region along the East or Gulf coasts. Agricultural products that aren't needed locally can easily be floated downriver to a harbor and then moved to other parts of the country or exported overseas. Ordinarily, agricultural zones as vast as the American Midwest are underutilized because the expense of transporting their yield elsewhere slashes into the economics of cultivation. To return to the Russian comparison, for example, even in modern times, Russian crops are liable to spoil before crossing the Eurasian steppe to reach market. And Russia has to maintain colossal man-made transportation networks for its land to reach anything close to its potential. But in the greater Mississippi Basin, the bulk of agricultural turf lies within 120 miles of navigable river. And the economic implications of this would really be impossible to overstate. The geography of most nations requires their governments to scrape together heaps of capital so that they can lay endless miles of rail and asphalt, just to form transport capacity, which is the groundwork of an economy. But in America, geography provided us with an almost flawless system at no expense. We have what could be called an intrinsic transport capacity. And this freed up a great deal of our resources for other economic pursuits. And it virtually guaranteed that America would be capital rich. With the available capital, America was able to complete its first transcontinental railroad all the way back in 1869, and its first coast-to-coast roadway in 1913. Russia didn't complete its first transcontinental railroad until 1916, and its first cross-country highway wasn't finished until 2008. So America's agricultural capacity and its maritime system are like the turkey and stuffing of our geography. They go together perfectly. The U.S.'s geography also gives the nation remarkable security advantages. And very rare advantages, because if you think about most countries on the globe, the threat of invasion is a persistent strategic concern. Russia has to account for threats along multiple borders, from powers like Germany and even China and Poland. France has to always consider the possibility of conflict with neighboring powers like Germany or the United Kingdom. In East Asia, China has to keep a wary eye on Japan and Russia, while India guards against both Pakistan and China. Pakistan, meanwhile, faces pressure from India and Iran. And then in the Middle East, Iran's strategic calculations include Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Turkey. And Saudi Arabia and Israel operate within a broader regional power struggle that also involves Iran, Turkey, and Egypt. And the list goes on and on. For most countries, danger lies just across the border. But for the United States, because of our geography, the situation is entirely different. To the east and west, the nation is buffered from other countries by thousands of miles of shining sea. And to the south lies Mexico, with terrain mostly too mountainous, too tropical, or too arid for anything but subsistence agriculture. Mexico also has no significant maritime transport system, and it's largely separated from the U.S. by a desert border. So because of all of this, for much of recent history, Mexico has presented no significant threat to the United States. And then, of course, to the north, we come to Canada, which is far more mountainous and far colder than America. And then if you look at Canada's only traversable waterway system, the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Great Lakes, those belong as much to the U.S. as they do to Canada. And then on top of that, the bulk of Canada's arable land lies just to the north of the American border. So that makes it economically wiser for Canada's provinces to integrate with America for trade than to work with neighboring Canadian provinces. So while geography hinders Mexico and Canada, it empowers the United States, leaving America with no major continental competition. The result is that the U.S. does not need to maintain a large standing military along any of its borders. And if a threat does flare up, the U.S. transport network allows it to quickly deploy its forces. So it's clear that America's geographic situation is exceptional. It's so exceptional that the Stratford Geopolitical Forecasting Company calls America the inevitable empire. They write, "When viewed together, the robust natural transport network overlaying vast tracts of excellent farmland, sharing a continent with two much smaller and weaker powers, it is inevitable that whoever controls the middle third of North America will be a great power." End quote. So there it is. The land is so remarkable that it was essentially inevitable that whoever came to inhabit it would become tremendously powerful. So if the people who inhabit this exceptional real estate were geographically guaranteed to become great, then it is worth considering how the American people came to possess it. And for the answer to this, we can look to the Bible, because the scriptures make clear that God, and not men, determined the geographic locations and national borders of the earth's various peoples. You can see that in Acts chapter 17, 26, where the Apostle Paul explained that God has made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. End quote. And then you can see that reinforced as well in Deuteronomy 32:8 and 2 Samuel 7:10. And long before Paul explained that truth, God inspired the Old Testament patriarch Jacob to bestow a landmark blessing upon his two grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh. He placed his left hand on the head of Manasseh, the older of the two boys, and he blessed him, saying that he would become a single great nation. You can see the details of that in Genesis 48:14 through 20 and Genesis 49:22 through 24. And God fulfilled this promise to Manasseh spectacularly in the 19th and 20th centuries. That's when Manasseh's descendants, who became the American people, acquired much of their land, including the massive Louisiana Purchase, and came into their own, really attaining just towering cultural dominance, unparalleled military might, and mind-boggling economic power. But before the 20th century, before the 19th century, even long before Ephraim and Manasseh were born, the Creator foreordained America's greatness with geography. All the way back when He was recreating the earth, as recorded in Genesis 1, sculpting its surface, separating the dry land from the sea, carving out the continents, all the way back then, God was mindful of Manasseh and of the future promise that He would make to him to establish His descendants as the single greatest nation on earth. And toward this end, God designated a massive and exceptional chunk of real estate for Manasseh's descendants, who would become the American people. It's also notable that geography motivates the U.S. government to take a more hands-off economic approach, not really found in any other country. Laissez-faire capitalism, of course, has its flaws, but it has contributed to America becoming a bastion of freedom and a place where God's work could be carried out, free of the persecution that would have plagued it in most any other nation. So it is very inspiring to consider that for some 5,500 years of mankind's history, the Creator set apart the bulk of American land, keeping it relatively isolated and thinly populated until Manasseh was ready to inhabit it and ready to receive those astounding blessings, with a huge part of that happening 250 years ago this month when the U.S. won its independence. God determined the bound of U.S. borders, as the Apostle Paul said, and He used geography mightily to foreordain America's power and prosperity. You can learn more about what lies ahead for the United States and what the nation needs to do to prosper in Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You can read that online for no charge, or you can order your own free print copy on our website, thetrumpet.com. We'll be happy to send that out to you. If you just navigate over to thetrumpet.com, click on the literature tab, and you'll see this book there, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. No cost, as I said, no shipping fees, no credit card info needed, and no follow-up. So no reason not to grab your copy of this powerful book. Thanks very much to Victor Granados for engineering and production, and we'll be back with you on Friday for our regular Week in Review show. Until then, keep watching your world.